Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. Support also comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack Andrea, a proud supporter of WGTD's Morning Show. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I invited Emily Kuhn to be a guest on today's program at the recommendation of Jeff Roberg, professor of political science at Carthage College, who fondly remembers Emily as a political science major at Carthage. Emily now makes her home in Middleton and actually was recently elected to the Middleton, Wisconsin City Council. She has created a fascinating app for voters called One My Vote. That's the numeral one, One My Vote, which helps potential voters keep track of all of the candidates in various races and also offers up a number of helpful resources for potential voters. We had the opportunity to have a conversation about some of the most significant races in Wisconsin, and we also talked about the app which she has created. Ahead of us talking about some of these big political races in Wisconsin, I would love to give you a chance to talk about the app. Again, it's called One My Vote. It's the numeral one, My Vote. And probably one of the most important things to say about it right off the bat is that this is meant to be a nonpartisan resource for voters. Tell us what prompted you to put this together and, in a sense, what sort of void you believe it fills.
Yeah, it's a great question. I was always that person in college and even in my 20s where people would come and say, who should I vote for? And I'd say, well, I'm not going to tell you who I'm going to vote for, but tell me your interests. And then I would sort of let them know the candidates who are running. And I would do that one by one, especially presidential candidate years or governor races. And then when I was a new mom, I realized that I was in the voting booth and I didn't know who was running. I was too busy, you know, changing diapers and keeping up with life. And so I thought there's got to be a better way to do this. There should be an app for this. And I remember standing in the polling booth in 2014 looking on my phone like, is there an app? I want to see who's running, especially down ballot once you're past the R's and the D's. And there wasn't. So I made an app for that. And because my parents were really polar opposites in politics, and my dad was military, he always said, I don't care who you vote for, but just make sure you do your civic duty and vote. And so we may clash politically, but he made sure that as children we understood this is our right. You know, he fought for that right. And so I designed this app thinking like, hey, if other people want to do their civic duty, but they don't know what to do and they get that almost, you know, slight panic attack in the voting booth, like, who is this? Are they going to represent me? Then this is an app just to make them feel more comfortable. And so we do include all political parties, including the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, the Constitution Party, because we want to make sure that people feel that they've reviewed everybody. And if in the end of the day, they feel that the Republican on the ticket is their best candidate for them and their family, then they feel good about it. That's a good thing. And the same thing for the Democrats or the Green Party. We just want people to be engaged. And so my husband does support me with the app. So he watches the kids while I program. And it's kind of a family thing. So we're pretty excited.
And I remember when I first opened up the app that I was presented with an array of choices in terms of, I think, every state in the union. Am I right? I mean, that this is not limited to Wisconsin.
Correct. We built it because we were thinking about, you know, the students at Carthage who are coming from different states. They hear there's a primary, and yet the resources available here isn't available in, say, Illinois and Indiana and Michigan. And so we built it so it's in all 50 states. And in 2016, we did the presidential race, the governor's race, and the federal Senate races in all 50 states. And we're going to do the same in 2020. In 2018, we are doing the governor races and the federal Senate races, probably more towards November because of the increase in candidate interests in all 50 states. So our primaries are full of like 12 to 15 options for every race. And in 2016, it was more like 3 to 5. So there's a growth nationally. And it's a really neat resource because if people listening already are engaged and they don't need it, they can share it with their kids who are away at college or with their neighbors and things like that. But the one of the great things about the app is when you're researching your candidates, you can actually save your favorites. Like you can, green is for go and red is for heck no. And under the My Ballot resource, you can click on that and you have an example of the races that you're tracking. So if you're following 5 different races, because here in Wisconsin, we're piloting down to the local ballot before we really go local in all 50 states, they can then screenshot that so that when they walk into the voting booth, they'll already have their candidates down to a final 2 or 3. Hmm.
Speaking of resources, when you open up the app, that's something else that you are presented with is a number of, I think, really helpful resources to, in a sense, help people vote. I mean, even beyond the whole matter of who to vote for and why,
yes.
But I mean, kind of the mechanics of voting. And again, I think this could be particularly helpful for someone who maybe is just moved to a particular state,
yes.
Maybe voting for the first time and might be uncertain about certain mechanics involved in terms of registration and so on. Just talk us through some of what is available through your app that helps people with just, in a sense, the logistical matter of being able to vote.
Right. It's a great question. My husband and I moved, I want to say 12 times in 15 years. And
wow.
So we moved to a new, right. So when we moved to a new state, he's also a Carthage alum. So we kept bebopping around in the Midwest and we'd go to vote and we missed the primary. Or we just didn't even know that you need an ID in this state, but you don't in that state. And here in Wisconsin, you can register the same day. So we tried to sit there and think about each state where each challenge was. And we came up with a list of resources, which includes, you know, how to get an absentee ballot. Because if you're busy like me, you might not remember there is an election. And so when it just pops in the mailbox, you can sit there and look at it. So how to register to vote. And then, you know, whether you can vote absentee, when you can register, and then also which districts you live in. Because when we were building this app, we realized that, for instance, a local alder race, city council race, I'm in District 4, but my county supervisor is the 28th, and the assembly number is the 79th, and then my Congress district is the 2nd. So there's no way to know as an average voter which race to follow. And so it's kind of challenging when you're programming to try to help voters. So we came up with a list of resources so you can actually look up what is my congressional district. So then you can kind of look at, okay, you know, who's running in my congressional race or what district do I actually live in for the assembly race? Because maybe you see signs on the way to work that, you know, you should vote for Peter Barca, who's in the district. But maybe you live 2 blocks beyond Peter Barca's district, so you're ready to vote for Peter Barca, you know, and I think his opponent is a constitutionalist, so maybe you're voting on the other side. And you're sitting there and you're like, oh, but I don't live in that district. Peter's name's not on there. And so it's kind of, we built those resources to try to find a way to help voters, you know, wherever they're stuck in the process. Because a lot of people felt that that we just have to register lots of people and then people will become engaged. And we were trying to figure out what is that point in a voter's thought process where they just don't engage in the process every year or every other year. And this is part of the piece.
Right. And I think particularly for younger people, although not exclusively younger people, this is a way to answer some questions that they might really be embarrassed to ask. I mean, like,
yes.
If they move someplace, it might feel really embarrassing to ask your neighbor or ask somebody
right.
at work, which congressional district do I live in or who is my
right.
alderman or whatever. I mean, it's nice to have, in a sense, a private means of getting that basic a question answered I think you've really done a great job of kind of putting yourself in the shoes of many potential voters out there who might feel intimidated by some of those really basic questions.
Well, thank you. That's an honor.
We're speaking with Emily Kuhn, and we've just now been talking about the app that she created called One My Vote, which can help people navigate all of the significant political races that are coming up. And that's what we're going to start talking about now, some of the big political races afoot here in the state of Wisconsin. And we're going to be really focusing on three of them, the race for governor and the plethora of Democratic challengers, potential challengers for incumbent governor Scott Walker. And we'll also take a little time to talk about also the matter of the lieutenant governor's race, which sometimes gets kind of shunted off to the side. There's also, of course, the matter of the first congressional race with the retirement of longtime incumbent Paul Ryan, and who is likely to come into place to contend for that seat come November. And finally, the U.S. Senate seat, and a very contentious primary race shaping up on the Republican side for a challenger for incumbent Tammy Baldwin. All big races, all compelling stories in one way or another. And I suspect you find your schedule occupied day and night just keeping track of these three races alone.
Yes, yes. It's a big challenge.
So let's talk first of all about the governor, and I suspect that part of what you end up doing is trying to kind of keep track of the polling numbers, which in and of itself can be kind of a complicated matter. What are the polls showing, and from whatever else other resources you're drawing from, just how vulnerable is Governor Scott Walker at this point in time?
You know, that's a great question. I can tell you from talking to voters, but also looking at the app data, that he's a toss-up of 50-50%. And that is a little bit surprising going into 2018, because he recently ran for president in 2016. You would think there'd be an overwhelming excitement. You know, we get to keep him. We're going to keep moving policies forward. But there's just sort of this, like, this hum. And so on the Democrat side, you know, because he actually is going to be primaried, there are a couple of Republicans running, but we expect that he's going to win his primary. And then on the Democrat side, there's currently, I believe it's 8 candidates, but at one point it was, I think, 14, because we had some people come in early and then drop out and then come in, or like, come in again and then drop out. But a lot of the candidates are very, like almost boring. You know, they're all being very nice right now. They all have a wealth of experience. But it's interesting, because if we put up a candidate much like in 2010 and 2014, where it's a very calm, you know, a quiet person, kind of standard operations, Walker will win. I think the only chance Democrats have at winning is to actually put up someone who's going to have an interesting conversation, you know, during the debate. I can tell you that Evers is winning according to standard polling, but we feel that those are missing out on people who don't have landlines. So Evers is winning on the Democrat side. I believe he's got like 32%, which, when there's 8 candidates, that's a huge chunk. But there's about 35% of people who are undecided in that polling. Hmm. Which is a huge number. And then in-app polling shows that it's actually Kelda Royce and Malon Mitchell are in a dead heat, and they're winning. That Mike McCabe is number 3, and Tony Evers is actually number 5.
And again, clarify again what you just said in terms of what these numbers are now that you are talking about.
With the app polling?
App polling. So via your app or other
Correct.
Apps? Okay.
I apologize. The One My Vote app, we do have some data on how voters feel, and it's in the aggregate form. It goes back to 2016. We actually knew about Trump early on, about March of 2016. And the media didn't pick up on it until May, June, that he was a serious candidate. And so we didn't share it with people because everyone who we told said we weren't statistically appropriate. And so we must have had just bad data. So it's been interesting because our voters are telling us who they like and who they really don't like. And so Evers is not really in the horse race, according to app users. And these are like 30 to 50 year olds. That's our big chunk of users. And because it's a smartphone, we believe we're capturing people who are not answering those traditional polling landline questions.
Let's talk through some of these candidates and just get what you are hearing from different people about what draws them, what is not exciting them about particular candidates. And so many of them have really intriguing stories in one way or another. Of course, one of the candidates on the governor's side, on the Democratic side, I should say, is Paul Soglin, such an interesting man. Maybe not quite so well known in this part of the state, but where you live, as a mayor of Madison several times over and a longtime activist, he's a really, really big name. How does somebody like Paul Soglin matter in a race like this when we're talking about the entire state, someone who is so closely tied to Madison itself?
You know, that's a really good question. I can tell you, according to the One My Vote app, he's got a high dislike rate outstate. And I can tell you, in Dane County, we don't feel he's taking the race seriously. He's been more active in the last month or two, and the things that he is supporting are very progressive policies. But even in those cases, you're not hearing the things that we heard in 2016 and 2017 by voters across the political spectrum. In 2017, Wisconsin voters talked about roads, marijuana legalization, and term limits. And so I haven't really heard Paul Soglin or Mayor Soglin talk about even weed legalization. You know, where is his stance on that? I mean, if you want to be a true progressive and be really out there, which I think is where he's trying to put himself on the spectrum of the candidates, then I think he needs to come out swinging and say, hey, this is where I stand, whether it's decriminalization, medical marijuana, you know, or just heck no, we're staying out of that horse race.
One of the least well-known names on this list, I frankly only know because it happens to be somebody my dad is supporting. He lives in Madison, and he and his wife have been volunteering on behalf of someone by the name of Mike McCabe, who seems to be running a somewhat unconventional campaign in terms of refusing all big money donations and doing a lot of things in kind of out of the ordinary ways.
Yeah, Mike is an interesting guy. He is trying to run as a true bipartisan candidate. Like, he's still a Democrat, but he's willing to work across the aisle with Republicans. And he won't accept donations over $200. I recently went to listen to him, you know, at a speech, and he wears blue jeans, and he's proud of that. And he's doing a lot of these house parties where he just talks to people about what he's running on and the issues, and he wants to get money out of politics. That is literally his policy. So he's actually running number three in our app, and people are liking what he's saying, but he seems to have a finite amount of interest. He's not getting this movement towards him. You know, where Kelda and Malon are starting to get movement towards them, like they're interesting, where Mike is got a really good energized base, but they're not seeming to grow. So it's, you know, he might pull something out. That would be an interesting conversation in 2 weeks if you want to have that. But I don't really see it at this point, but I'm super glad that your parents are super involved and engaged in who they believe in.
Absolutely. Of course, a well-known name on this list is Matt Flynn, if you have followed Wisconsin politics, although I'm not sure he's actually ever managed to win public office any of the times he's won, but he's certainly been a big name in Wisconsin politics, I believe, a former state Democratic Party chairman, and but someone who has a couple of issues kind of hanging over his head that are probably holding him back in this race.
Yes, that's been a little bit of trickiness coming out of the Milwaukee area. Because he was a lawyer and he worked on some sensitive cases, I believe in the 90s. And, you know, that's the tricky thing is that when you work on things over time, the pendulum changes. And I can tell you, growing up in St. Louis, we had like issues involving the Catholic diocese. And I can tell you, when I heard that, I was like, that's a no for me. But that's because we dealt with 10 years of these cases coming to light, and whether people knew or didn't know, and when did they know? And man, that's a hard conversation, especially in the post-Me Too movement. You know, Matt Flynn is going to have an upward battle. I can tell you he has a high dislike rate. And I think it comes back to that. It may not even be the cases in Milwaukee and his prior lawyer litigation type of stuff. It's more like, okay, well, you know, we had Mayor Barrett who ran against Governor Walker twice. And then we had Mary, I think I can't remember her last name, Burke, Mary Burke, in 2014, you know, and we're kind of putting these nice, you know, people who are about the same age as Governor Walker, just up against him, you know, and Matt Flynn is another white guy who's up against Walker, who's a white guy. And I think it's just kind of boring to voters. You know, the same thing with Tony Evers. It's another white guy. And I don't ever want to say that in such a way, but it's sort of like, if you're just going to put somebody up who has the same personality, a lot of the same platforms, you might as well stick with somebody you know, which at that point would be Governor Walker. So I think that might be why people are just stepping away from Matt Flynn, is that just based on seeing him and a couple policies, they're like, eh, he's just boring. Hmm. You know, not really lighting that fire.
Right. By the way, we should at least make passing reference of this person who's probably at the bottom of the pack, but a name that some people know around this area because he grew up originally in Kenosha. That would be one of the latecomers to the race, Josh Pade.
Yes.
I'm not sure how meaningful actually his participation in all of this really is, but he seems sincere.
Yes, yes. And, you know, you got to support people who are interested in running. I believe he's an analyst in one of the local businesses. Might be an attorney, I can't recall, but you know, we had some early interest in the governor's race. There was a hairdresser from Dane County who's like, you know what, if no one else is going to run, I'm going to run, and I'm going to put forward that, you know, that a hairdresser from Wisconsin can run for office. So in that spirit, I honor Josh Pade for running, getting engaged, getting his name out there, and that might be part of his long-term vision is, hey, I'm interested in running and I want to make a difference. Because he can also then talk to people about, you know, what his policy platform is and make them respond. So I haven't seen Josh's issues of late, but, you know, he might be pro-business as a Democrat and, you know, make Walker respond to that, especially with Foxconn coming to the Kenosha Racine area.
Let's quickly talk about the last three names in this race. Kathleen Vinehout, a veteran state senator who really loves policy. Kelda Helen Royce, who's attracted a lot of attention as a former state rep and someone for whom family is very important. And Malin Mitchell, the firefighter, the
yes.
union guy. Three interesting candidates for sure.
Yes, they're all interesting. Kathleen Vinehout has... comes out of the Eau Claire area. She's a hunter and a farmer and a professor. Like, she's got a great resume. And my understanding is that she has a really good understanding of budgeting. And I am a budgeter by trade, so I can tell you, like, I get her. Like, that's awesome. But sometimes we, being budgeters, get into the wonky side of things. So sometimes it's hard for us to conversate at that local door-to-door, you know, thing. So I would keep an eye on Kathleen. I think she has a good heart and good intentions. But I can tell you, being outstate too, she's struggling because she aligns herself with the hunters and the farmers. And so sometimes that doesn't play as well in the Dane County, Milwaukee County area. And those are the turnouts that we have to get buy-in with. So as Democrats, running across the state, you have to get upstate to come out and be energized, and downstate, of course, like from Beloit to Kenosha Racine, we got to get those, you know, voters out. But you can't alienate, you know, Milwaukee County and Dane County. We just got to pull together. So, Kathleen, if she can pull that out, she might, you know, pull it off.
Hmm. How about Kelda Helen Royce?
Okay, so she is from Dane County. She does have a young family. She is actually a woman in tech and has a business that hires people, and she built that after she served in the legislature. She is an attorney by trade and has lived in New York. I can tell you, she reminds me of the old Teddy Roosevelt, you know, piece where it's, you know, be quiet or walk quietly and carry a big stick. I think that's the phrase. I can kind of see that in her. You don't really see her out, you know, screaming like, you know, she's the best or she needs this. She's more like, hey, you know, we need to think about families and checkbooks and, you know, voters, you know, this is what we care about. And I can tell you that she's listening to voters because she's talking about, you know, where those costs are coming from. I can tell you that she understands that healthcare is a big issue on the Democrat side. And the medical marijuana is kind of where she's coming out at. So she's hearing that voters are interested, and at least she's standing her ground.
Finally, Malin Mitchell, who is the firefighter and a man who has stepped forward very forcefully on the whole issue of unions, which of course has been a prime concern during the tenure of Governor Walker.
Yes, he is an interesting candidate to follow. He has really strong presence when he speaks and in commercials. Like, he really tries to reach out as the common man. And having run a union, he can talk to voters where they're at, but then he can also talk to the larger group. I can tell you he's had a few missteps, you know, where he said, I would say, potty mouth words. And you have to be careful because everything is videoed nowadays. So, but I can tell you too, like, him having lived through Act 10 as a union leader, he's going to know how to step into the ring and talk about that. He is now talking about race, and that because he's African-American, he can stand up to racism in the state and disparities that happen. Now, that's not to say that other people can't, and I know before I referred to old white guys, that's really not appropriate, so I do apologize, but it's kind of what I hear from voters. But it's interesting because Malin Mitchell is then pivoting himself as the I'm not an old white guy candidate. He's saying, hey, look, I'm a person of color and I get you. And that may play well in Milwaukee County and in parts of Kenosha Racine and parts of Dane County. But does that pull in the rest of the state? You know, does that pull in your Northwoods voter or your Appleton voter? To the rate that we need to get people out and get him to the win. And the other thing before we go on is what I pose to voters is, who do you want to see in the ring with Governor Walker? If you're really okay with sending someone like Evers or Flynn to talk about the nuances of policy, and even Mayor Soglin, you know, the nuances of policy, you know, is that a fair fight? If you want to try somebody new, maybe a Kathleen Vinehout talking guns and hunting, you know, that might be your person. And if you're of a younger generation, you might want to see someone like you. And I believe Kelda and Malin are Gen Xers, so they might have a spicy side to them that's like, hey, bring it. And if you want to see that, those fighting words, that could make for an interesting September to November political season.
Right. Before we go on, I want to just try to help us all understand. How should we treat the app poll numbers that you mentioned? That is, the polling that has been done through your app, Won My Vote. I mean, I suspect that's not a poll that's quite as extensive as some other polls that we have heard of, but it probably is also maybe garnering responses from people who might not otherwise be responding to some of these other polls that tend to be limited to people with landlines and so on. So just help us put this, your poll numbers, your app poll numbers in proper context. How should we treat those numbers?
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. It's not statistically accurate as compared to traditional polling. But we get truly anonymous voters from across the political spectrum. And that seems to get us closer to accuracy than a traditional poll. And we found that in 2016, because a lot of people were telling us they wanted Trump, and they weren't telling the national polls that. And so we went back to voters that we knew downloaded it, and we're like, we know you're a Republican, so you probably voted for Trump because we have these enormously high Trump fans. But there, everyone was telling us, nope, not me. I didn't vote for Trump. I'm like, well, somebody had to vote for Trump. And so I finally got someone to answer that they didn't want to tell a pollster that they were that guy. And I was like, well, what does that mean? And he was like, well, you know, when you're talking to a person, you don't want to say who you're really voting for. You know, you don't want them to judge you. And I'm like, but you would tell, you know, a smartphone app? And they said, yeah, because nobody knows, because we do it in an aggregate form.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so it's more like a focus group, and a true focus group only needs about 12 voters. And what we found is in the last six elections, we have gotten five of the six correct. And one of them was the mayor of Middleton. And it was about 3 weeks out, and we knew it was a toss-up election. The city of Middleton is about 20,000 people. Everybody that we knew, like the politicos in town, said it was a 90% chance to 100% chance it would be this other guy. His name was Hans. And really great guy. He's on city council, and the current mayor also on city council. But everyone thought Hans was the local favorite. Everyone was going to vote for him. And in the last 3 weeks, somebody challenged us, you know, who's going to win? And so we went and did our survey analysis, and we came back and we're like, we're not going to charge you. It's a 50-50 toss-up. And they said, wow, but everybody else says it's going to be Hans hands down. And I said, no, it's like 50-50. Maybe it's 45-55. Well, it turns out Mayor Brar won by a half of 1%. So it was literally 50.5 to 49.5. And so somehow our data is working. We're not fully sure how it works because we're not trying to be invasive. But it's interesting to be in the horse race and see all 12 candidates running. Will Kelda and Malon be at a 50-50, you know, like split with Mike McCabe and Kathleen Vinehout and Tony Evers as a secondary, you know, pushback? Or will, you know, somebody come out and really surge their voters? You know, maybe Matt Flynn takes it, or maybe Tony Evers really does come through like traditional polling says. So we'll find out.
We're speaking with Emily Kuhn, the creator of the app Won My Vote, and we're talking about some of the significant political races in Wisconsin. Briefly, you mentioned in an email to me that there is always the possibility that we could, come November, end up with Governor Walker, but a Democratic lieutenant governor. Is that a likely possibility?
I do see that. It's interesting because Walker right now is really a toss-up at 50-50, and that's without a known candidate. You know, there's just no surge of energy really pushing those other candidates out of the race. And, you know, that might change once we pick somebody. But really, right now, Walker is, you know, done some good stuff over 8 years, and people are kind of happy, and they know what he's going to do and, you know, what his vision is. But I can tell you that if you coalesce around Mandela Barnes and Kurt Kober's voter ROM, they're actually pulling ahead of Rebecca Clayfish, and she is the Republican incumbent. But we kind of see this in other states as well. A lot of the times, lieutenant governors are not, you know, getting their face out there or leading in the media, like I do these projects, or I'm really number two. I'm always with the, you know, governor, and I'm always doing all these things. You know, if she's having a so-so kind of race, Mandela Barnes or Kurt Kober could really pull it out. And I can tell you there's some interest around Mandela Barnes around the state, and he is really pulling ahead. So if he pulls it off, say we stay with Governor Walker, we could have a Democrat as the lieutenant governor. So if you're a Republican listening, you might want to start knocking doors for Rebecca Clayfish. Even if you think Walker is safe, you might want to keep an eye on that number two job.
Wow. Let's go to the first congressional race. And, of course, with the impending retirement of Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, this is a race that is truly up for grabs in a way that it has not been in a couple of decades.
Right.
So how do the numbers look here as far as you're concerned on both the Republican and Democratic side?
This is really exciting. I'm really glad you're in the first congressional. This says engagement like nothing I've seen. And I can tell you about a year ago, Randy Brice was way ahead on the Democrat side. Kathy Myers was just prodding along, doing her thing, making her calls, really focusing on her campaign. And somewhere in there, like whether the polling was showing that there's a chance the Democrats could take it, or because Speaker Ryan felt he got his tax, package through, and he needs to protect, national Congress to keep the Republicans in, he decided to step down. And I know he said family reasons, but that is a traditional Republican statement for when our polling isn't doing so well, is what we found in 2016. So he steps down, and Kathy and Randy are still neck and neck. Randy was still leading by a lot, according to the One My Vote polling, up until about 2.5 months ago. And out of nowhere, Kathy starts to really go toe-to-toe with him. So that was interesting to watch statistically. And I can tell you, she's about a hair ahead of him right now. So if she pulls it off, it'll probably be a 51% win next week. Now, that does also show interest in the national movement of getting more women into Congress, because women are only about 22% of representatives. And most people think it's fair and equal, but it's really not. It's about 1 in 5, 1 in 4. Women in even local representation. Now, on the Republican side, once he stepped down, because Nealon ran against him in 2016, Nealon is still there. But then Brian Steele, I believe his name is, if that's how you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
He is running. He used to work for Speaker Ryan. He's ahead. I can tell you he's ahead according to in-app polling. And then Nick Pulse, Kevin Steen, Jeremy Ryan, and Brad Boylan is also running. And they're kind of like running along the lines of Paul Nealon. There's just not a lot of interest going on. Now, in the first congressional, we have the least amount of data out of all the subsets. So this could be statistically inaccurate. However, with Brian Steele, I believe Speaker Ryan has already voiced his support for him. That could really turn out the vote for Brian next week. And then it'll be interesting, because it's really like a Paul Ryan 2 versus either a Kathy Myers or a Randy Brice. And that's going to be an interesting debate, because Randy Brice is, I believe, an iron worker, union guy, wears the hard hats. He's going to come out in full force in that debate area. Kathy Myers was a teacher who led a protest, a union worker, she's part of the union, and she can talk about that and what Act 10 has done in the state, what teacher funding has done in the state. And then Randy can talk about what it's like to live, in the district and be struggling and trying to make, your payments, whether it's rent, food, getting food on the table for your kids. And that's going to be an interesting conversation, because someone like Paul Ryan, he was a little out of touch with the multimillionaire status he was starting to garner. And, the average working Wisconsinite is still trying to, fix their car because of all the potholes.
Interesting. I suppose one of the questions that's really hard to answer at this point is, once a Republican candidate emerges and a Democratic candidate emerges, then what will happen?
Good question. Yeah. I can tell you, I feel if you get the right Democrat candidate up, there might be a surge in voters out who are interested in that candidate. And that's something I'm kind of seeing in the news locally. It's something that Kelda's kind of pushing I've seen emails from her about that, because I get a lot of emails from all the candidates to kind of get the feel from their campaigns. And that's an interesting concept, because if it's the same old, like Tom Barrett, they ran in 2010. And then when we did the recall election, we ran the same guy on the Democrat side. And it's like, well, if you didn't vote for him the first time, why are you suddenly going to, you know, turn out extra people to vote for him? So if we're running a Paul Ryan too, and people are like, okay, after 20 years with Paul Ryan, you know, it's kind of a ho-hum kind of race for the Republican side. For the Democrat side, if you get someone interesting who can really pull it out, whether it's Randy Bryce or Kathy Myers, you know, maybe Kathy stands up and says, I really care about teachers, and the teachers come out in support for her, she could pull it off, especially in the Me Too movement, like the post-Me Too. And there's an energy behind women candidates nationally. And so you might get some of those suburban voters who come out and vote for her.
Finally, we want to talk about the Senate race. And, of course, we're talking about the incumbent Tammy Baldwin and a contentious Republican race for this upcoming primary between Kevin Nicholson and Leo Vukmir. And how do you see this shaping up? How are voters viewing these two potential candidates?
Yeah, it's really a great race to watch. I can tell you that Kevin is of a younger generation. He was a Democrat before, gave his national speech about being a Democrat in college. And Leah Vukmir is like, I've been a conservative all my life. You know, I'm a hardcore conservative. I can tell you my dad would probably vote for her. Back in the day, he doesn't live in the state, but if he was here, he'd be like, yeah, you know, I get her. She's awesome. And if that happens, it's going to be a woman versus a woman. So that would be neat to me, because, you know, the Republicans are starting to put female candidates forward. But Kevin Nicholson's an interesting case, because a lot of people in other states, when they have conversion candidates from one party to the other, are like, well, he's not a true Republican. And I can tell you that my dad used to say, yeah, you're a Democrat because you don't pay taxes. You're 20-something, you don't pay taxes. It's easy for you to be a Democrat. Wait till you pay taxes. And so, you know, Kevin Nicholson, you know, will have his journey. I believe he served in the military. You know, time overseas may have given him some life experience. I can tell you they're policy-wise, they're almost the same. So that when you take policy out of the picture, we at One My Vote feel that it's election campaigning is 30%, policy is about 30%, and charisma is that remaining 40%. I can tell you that Scott Walker is doing a lot of social media campaigning for Leah Vukmir and really pushing his voters to be like, vote for Leah. So that may carry her over. We said about a month ago that she would win her primary at 56%. That's what we're standing our ground on. And but then when it comes in November, that Tammy Baldwin would maintain her status as a senator. Now, people might push back and say, hey, it's too early to call that race. And I think that Leah will push Tammy to actually state a lot of her policies. And I think that's a healthy place to be. I think Kevin could do the same thing, having been a Democrat. And I think he has a good case. But I think we might see Kevin again, you know, maybe in 4 years, 6 years. He has a long time ahead of him. And that's not to say don't vote for him. It's more like, you know, learning that polish and learning that, you know, election, you know, like how to run a statewide campaign, and knowing your policies and then really getting your voters out. I think that's going to come in time for him, but I think Leah Vukmir is like on top of it. So it's going to be an interesting debate season for those two.
Absolutely. Last quick question. What is your sense about Republican candidates in the state of Wisconsin in terms of whether or not it makes sense for them to align with President Trump? That is a question that is playing out, of course, all across the country. How do you see that playing out in the state of Wisconsin? Does it make sense for Republican candidates to align with the president or not?
Good question. I don't have any data, like, you know, even in the aggregate on that. I can tell you other states are much more for Trump. Wisconsin, because we had Governor Walker in the race, you know, there's that little bit of you know, we wanted our own guy to win. So I could see them hesitating a bit more in our state as compared to, say, like in Ohio or Indiana. I would say it would depend on the very local voter base. If you're in, I don't know, let's say Southwest Wisconsin. When we drove in October of 2016, there was a Trump sign on literally like every mile between Dane County and Iowa. That is, if that's your base, then go ahead, align yourself with with Trump and the Trump train. But I can see where like Milwaukee, where the Harley-Davidson people are talking about tariffs and having to move facilities overseas now, that if you're a Republican in that metro area, you might want to maybe pick and choose the topics that Trump is supporting you on. Because if Trump is really helping folks, especially with like Foxconn, then yeah, we're going to align ourselves with Walker and Foxconn and Trump. But if you live north of Milwaukee, you might be like, oh, our Harley-Davidson, you know, the people driving into work at Harley, that's my base. You're probably going to distance yourself. So I would say Wisconsin is probably a very district by district, whether they support him or not. But great question.
And how about the matter of Foxconn? How is that playing out as an issue in other parts of the state? I mean, where people who live here have very strong opinions about it, pro and con. In general, how is the matter of Foxconn playing in the rest of the state of Wisconsin? For instance, for Governor Walker.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really going to play out well for him, especially towards October. I can tell you that Wisconsin Republicans have very strategically made decisions that will play out for the pocketbooks of voters right before the election, which is when people really pay attention. 1 to 3 weeks out is when voters really pay attention, according to our app, because we get downloads at that time. So I can tell you that in the last month, I'm seeing in the media that, you know, instead of Racine getting all the contracts for Foxconn, they're starting to pick out their base. You know, like I believe in the Appleton, Green Bay area, someone just got a huge contract, you know, and then someone up in the Northland is about to get a just got a contract. I think that was announced last week. And it's one of those things where you see them starting to strategically pick, you know, where their base is to get some economic development push that's like a subcontractor or a contractor for the Foxconn development. And I think that's a really smart move by Republicans. And I knew right away that Foxconn would happen because Speaker Ryan's district. And so there's a lot of moving pieces where they've made strategic decisions and investments. I can tell you here in Dane County, it's not liked at all. But the minute they said, well, you might get a contract, you know, we're bidding contracts in Dane County for Foxconn, then all of a sudden people were like, oh, this is a great project. And so it was surprising to watch how quickly voters were pivoting on that Foxconn investment. And I can tell you right now, as a budgeter, 20 years from now, that's a hard sell for voters. Like, hey, we're going to put $3 to $4 billion, but it's going to return investment, you know, 25 years from now when your kids are voting. And have households, but they're making their strategic decisions properly on those developments right now to get those voters to pull through. So I kind of see Walker doing really well in November. And, you know, if the economy holds, voters vote with their pocketbook.
Emily Kuhn's app, One My Vote, that's the numeral one. One My Vote is available free from the App Store. I'm Gregory Berg. Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Support for the morning show also comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfer students is available at carthage.edu /admissions/transfer. You're listening to WGTD HD